Hi there, listeners. Welcome back to a very special Pride Month episode of the Students Beyond Borders podcast, and happy Pride! In this episode, Amber and I spoke to USAC alum Brent Coulter about his experiences studying abroad as an LGBTQ student. Brent covers the differences in attitudes and customs between China and Spain, navigating life abroad in a conservative, don't ask, don't tell community, and how study abroad impacted his identity. This episode is packed with touching personal stories and great advice for LGBTQ plus students. Ready? Let's get started.
Welcome everyone to another podcast episode with USAC. We have our guest today, Brent Coulter, who is one of our star USAC alum. He most recently was on a language panel with USAC, and we're thrilled to have him back to talk about all things for Pride Month. So June is the month of Pride Month, and we are excited to dive in. So to kick us off, Brent, would you mind introducing yourself, where and when you studied abroad, and then what you've been up to since then?
Yeah, no, thank you so much for the introduction, Amber. I'm so happy to be here and share my experience. My name is Brent. I studied in San Sebastian, Spain for one semester. I think it was fall 2011, and then Chengdu, China from actually fall 2012 until fall 2013. So I did a few study abroads. And since I've studied abroad, I've taken the approach that those experiences served as stepping stones or platforms for me to build a career and an international lifestyle. I really value mobility. I don't know. It could be because I was from Reno, which wasn't particularly cosmopolitan and international, and I was a little thirsty for more. And I just wanted to live an adventurous life. And so these study abroad experiences for me, to be honest, when I first came back from San Sebastian, I thought, oh, great. You know, this was it. This was my study abroad. And I couldn't come to terms with the fact that maybe this was the only time I'd ever get to live abroad. And so I kind of dedicated my life to finding ways to be able to go abroad and to learn and to grow beyond myself. There's a saying, you know, a seed is just a seed until it touches water, that they say in China. And for me, I felt like the world out there was water, and I was just this person aware of their ignorance and curious to know more. And so I set off to Chengdu for a year and a half, which I ultimately ended up becoming more after I graduated. I stayed in China for 5 years in total, ended up working there, building a career. I first went to China when I was like 21 years old. And so I left when I was 26, 27. It was weird coming back to the United States, being like, I only have job experience in mainland China. But the experience I had in Chengdu, the language learning that I had there through the USAC program really allowed me to thrive. And I'm super excited to be here and share my experience, especially related to the LGBTQ plus aspect of everything, because that's something that I believe is completely relevant and exciting to talk about in this interesting globalized world that we're in, where we're creating these new modern values and a new paradigm. And I'm excited to share my experience because I believe it was pretty unique, and I wish someone would have shared their experience with me prior to going abroad.
Well, thank you for that intro, Brent. We're excited to have you. We're excited to hear all about your experiences and how it pertains to your identity. I love what you've already touched on, recognizing that a young college student, you were aware of your ignorance and knew that study abroad, or at least hoped that study abroad, could help you kind of work through some of those things and grow as a person and develop your identity and all of that stuff. So let's dive into it. Leading in, it is Pride Month, as we've mentioned. So what does Pride mean to you, and how does Pride play a role in your life, who you are as a person?
Oh, I love this question because I think about it all the time. For me, pride is not just a pride of myself, right? I really think about the people who came before me, who paved a path that allowed me to be able to authentically express who I am, to exist in spaces as a gay man. And I believe that everyone who suffered in the past, who had to give up everything, their families, all of this, who really was on the edge and took these risks for their entire existence, it really opened a space for the rest of us to exist and envision ourselves in society in a way that previously wasn't available to us. So for me, pride is much more of paying homage to the people before me. I'm proud of them for everything that they sacrificed. And on top of that, I feel like I have a duty and an obligation to also make sure that I maintain that fight for our rights, for our recognition, for our visibility. And that's part of the reason that I'm contributing to a podcast like this, is because I feel like I have a duty to continue passing it on.
Thank you, Brent. I'm hearing so much gratitude and passion behind those folks who really paved the path for you to be successful and happy and live your authentic life. So thank you for sharing that. I'm wondering, just looking back, did your identity play a role in your study abroad decisions?
Yes. I think at the time that I studied abroad, actually, the United States still only had like 7 states, including DC, where gay marriage was even legal. It was just a really interesting time. I mean, I was 19 and I knew that Spain was a very open place. I think at the time Spain had legalized gay marriage, but I knew in general that it was an accepting place that I could be out. You know, I was young. So it wasn't like a huge factor in my life. I really wanted to just learn Spanish and live in Spain. And of course, who doesn't imagine having a partner on these cobblestone streets, like walking down San Sebastian or Madrid? Later, when I went to China, which was a year afterwards, I did actually consider the LGBTQ aspect of it. There had been some people previously who had talked about Chengdu being a very open place, and it kind of had a reputation for being a gay-friendly city in China. So I very much took that into consideration when I went to Chengdu. For the programs that I picked, looking back, I think the best thing that I did, and I think this is what really is USAC's value add to the study abroad world, is that the cities and the programs are so intimate and in such interesting places. You can go to Shanghai, you can go to big cities, and that's great. But like, I loved the fact that I could go to San Sebastian or to Chengdu, these places that are a little bit more off the beaten path and where the culture is a little bit more nuanced. And so that was a factor that I took into consideration. I think now in hindsight, I could see, like, if I had gone to Shanghai, I don't think I would have been so tapped into the idea of my identity and how it played a factor into the decision, because it's a global cosmopolitan city where there's tons of international values. Did I know that at the time? Probably not. But, you know, Shanghai, along with other major, you know, cities around the world, you typically find that they're a lot more open. But when I learned that Chengdu specifically was known as an open place, absolutely considered that as a factor.
Yeah, I want to jump in. I think that's a great point to make, that these larger, more globalized cities in general, whether as a whole they're more accepting, at least have, you know, communities that students of all different demographics, whether it's LGBTQ members or students who identify with certain races or ethnicities, like larger cities definitely have pockets and areas that it's more common to find any sort of home, quote unquote, in those cities. And so smaller, lesser known cities like Chengdu are kind of hidden gems in that sense, because you don't expect it as much, like you're saying, as you would Shanghai or a larger city like Melbourne, what have you. That's a great point to make.
Totally, totally, yeah. I think now with technology also, the amount of information that's out there, it's so much easier to find a community, even in a smaller space, a smaller city. And I love that we can say, I mean, Chengdu's not small. It's like 15 million people or something. But
yeah, it's just not Shanghai, so we call it small.
I think one of my concerns with China was like, the way that I had a preconceived notion of China was that it was like this authoritarian sort of country. And I wasn't sure, you know, if I could just be my United Statesian gay expressive self there. And so I showed up on China's door like, hey, this is me. But I took a moment to really try to understand the culture and what representation was. I tried to look around for it. I tried to, you know, understand it on a deeper level, because other than accounts that I had from a few people, there weren't that many resources, or there's no gay district with like gay flags everywhere. You know, China's very much kind of like, hey, don't ask, don't tell. But I think one of the things that really did blow my mind about China that I didn't consider, and I think students should factor into their decision, if they're going to a place like China, is comparing to the United States, certain factors like China, when the communist revolution happened and communism came in, it was a political ideology, but it also replaced religious ideologies. Like religion was technically just banned. So, you know, people today in China are rediscovering what their Buddhist roots are. They're rediscovering their sort of traditions, and they're incorporating them now into modern life. But for many years, China never had like what the US had, where there were these big religious organizations pushing for traditional values. You just had a government saying like, hey, you know, we're looking at the statistics of how big our population is. We believe in like traditional family, but we got to put a pause and like make a one child only policy. There wasn't really this pressure from some sort of interest group saying like, nah, because of the Bible, because of this, there's got to be a standard family. So there is a total absence of this kind of like this stigma of gayness in China that I didn't know that before. I think one of the ideas that I also had about being gay in China, I think that actually ended up being a little wrong, was just that I could be this authentic person, this gay person in the context that I was in the United States. I had developed an identity really around that. And because at the time it was very much this sort of fight for gay marriage and everything, there was really a binary, this dichotomy of you had to either identify with being gay or not. And people often identify with whichever one of their allegiances is most under attack. Otherwise, it becomes some sort of complex or whatnot. So I think now with society being a little bit more open and obviously having, you know, countrywide same-sex legalization, I hope that people don't feel they need to be so strongly identified with their LGBTQ plus identity. That said, of course, it's going to be a part of who you are. And you know, along with trans classmates of mine, you know, lesbian classmates of mine, you know, we all kind of had a different perspective at this time of going to China, what this meant. And we were kind of cautious because we just didn't know. I was open with all of my American classmates, all the people within USAC, the program director, everything, never had an issue with that. And then outside, I was also open to it. And it kind of shocked some Chinese people that I was just so open to it. I never felt really judged, but they were kind of shocked about it. And that I was just willing to be open about it with myself. When I studied in Spain, it wasn't an issue at all. Spain was just like totally open, not an issue. China, very complex. You know, your identity in China, it's contextual on whatever group setting you're in. It's a totally different culture. And I was there long enough to really understand that and adapt to that. So there's a fine balance between wanting to be authentically myself and wanting to represent who I am and to wanting to have like cultural mobility. I was willing to, I guess, kind of take the rainbow flag off of my daily existence in order to explore spaces and navigate society in a way that I wasn't sure whether or not that my gay identity would hinder. You could look at this as like having to be oppressed in one perspective. You could look at it as like, this isn't for you. You have to hide the fact that you're gay. But it was more of this ambiguity that I kind of learned to play with. And this is part of what I learned in daily Chinese life is you show up to work and you play your role and you have to understand that context, that the hierarchies that you're in. And you don't show up like in the US where you have your eye on the ball to a job and you're like, this is me, this is what we're going to do, blah, blah, blah. You really have eyes in the back of your head and you kind of have to assess situations and context and have a really keen eyesight and figure out the best way to navigate situations. And so oftentimes that means not just your gay identity, but other parts of who you are, opinions, things like that. You keep them back because you're operating not as an individual, you're operating as a group sometimes. And so you want to be able to contribute to this group collective sort of motivation and goal setting, or even if it's a party, you want to be able to contribute in many ways to the energy that's going into this like collective experience in a way that requires you to kind of come back. I think that many people look at this in a negative way. There's saying about like, you know, East Asian culture, they have this, you know, whatever nail is sticking up too high, like gets hammered down. But it's also an incredibly amazing experience to integrate into a culture like that, where you have this flexibility of self and you allow more space for the culture to kind of pull you in directions and to guide you and to kind of tell you kind of what your role is in certain situations. So for example, after being in China for a few years and having gained some cultural competence, I decided at my professional job that I had gotten there working at the American Chamber of Commerce as a marketing manager and a policy analyst for US businesses operating in China. It was an amazing role. I was like 22, 23. I was super underqualified, but because I could speak Chinese and I was just the only one in Chengdu at the time, and I just knew the people, I got this amazing role. But I decided, because, hey, this is a professional role, I don't want to sacrifice my development in this role in China by being like too outwardly gay. It's not like the US where companies have like Pride Month, right? It's different. It's China. It's a lot of don't ask, don't tell. And it's changing a lot. But, you know, in terms of the way a corporation operates or a business, they see it more out of the realm of their company, of their scope. So I didn't tell my boss that I was gay. But Chinese are very intrusive when they ask questions. In our perspective, they ask, you know, oh, like, so how, you must have been dating, you know, some Chinese girls. Oh, like, do you have a partner? You know, and they make assumptions and stuff. And my boss, she was, you know, an open-minded Chinese woman, but she would ask me these questions that were sometimes very like leading into a certain answer. And part of the cultural competence that you need in China is learning how to say like, ah, no, like, you know, how to deflect things. And you don't have to answer every question. You know, someone, if a taxi driver asks you how much money you make or how much something you're wearing costs, you know, you don't have to answer that question. You can just deflect it. So I did that for the entire time that I was working at this place. It ended up being kind of this just curious thing that nobody really cared about, but that was like still kind of my secret. And if it were in the US, I would have never done that. I would have never, ever done that. But considering that context, it was hard. It's hard to strike that balance of being authentic and doing that. But, you know, this is just on the stricter side. I would love to discuss what the alternative is, like what is going on the grassroots, like queer culture in China. Do you have any questions regarding that sort of, I guess that?
Well, I was going to follow up and ask you, first off, I love everything that you're saying. I think that your perspective of treating how out you are, and like you said, whether you decide to wave that rainbow flag or tuck it away, shows a lot of maturity, and it shows a lot of, I think, really strong perspective that, like you said, it's not necessarily oppression. That's not what it is. It's just a different culture, a different way of handling things, right? And allowing yourself, the phrase that you said was flexibility of self, to adapt and present different parts of you in different situations with different people, truly is, I think, a big part of study abroad in general, but absolutely as study abroad as a member of the LGBTQ community. And you touched on this too, that it's the same here in the States with a lot of things, whether it's your sexual identity, your political views that you might have, opinions on social issues, whatever it may be, you know, it kind of does end up being treated the same way abroad, that, you know, you just have to be aware of your surroundings and aware of your audience and know how to pick and choose and handle things with each situation that you're in. So thank you. I think wonderful perspective. And I think that hopefully helps some students as they consider where to study abroad and how to navigate potentially less LGBTQ, I say with air quotes, friendly spaces, because just like you said, because they don't necessarily have a district with rainbow flags all up and down the block, doesn't mean that you can't live and thrive there safely and authentically.
No, yeah. Thank you so much for that. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. At the end of the day, I was very aware that I'm in a foreign country. I can't impose my values on this country. If that means that like I tuck away the rainbow flag, then like, honestly, I was okay with that. I don't know if everyone would be okay with that, but I still got my fix. There was a thriving gay community in China, in Chengdu, in Shanghai. It's a massive country. And I never really saw homophobia. Being gay and gayness has become a national topic. Everyone's kind of aware. There's a lot of visibility now in China from what I see on social media and everything like that. There still isn't like same-sex marriage legalized, but that does not prevent people from getting into partnerships and things like this. I mean, a few years ago, I think the statistic was that like 80% of gay Chinese men are married in heterosexual relationships, and 10% of the women married to those men find out in some way or whatever, they attempt suicide. So it became this sort of health crisis in China where we're like, okay, it's better to probably provide services. And now if you're HIV positive, you have a lot more resources. If you're a Chinese person, the government pays for it. People are more open to these conversations that were once really taboo. And I mean, we're talking about a culture too that's changing so fast. And we've had a generation of students from studying in the US, from the UK, you know, all over the world that are Chinese that have come back and are slowly replacing the elders in the structures of the society and the authority. And they're bringing back with them these more global ideas. And so that's what you kind of see. I will say, like, on the underground side, like parties and just meeting people, there is so much mingling. There's like the youth in China is just so expressive. I mean, I can't even compare it anymore to my Western counterparts. I think because China's purchasing power is just a lot larger than it is in the US. So people have more opportunity and more money to kind of spend on things in a way. And like they went from this culture where it was so close and in such a short amount of time to having a world of opportunities. So like even the gay culture that's like thriving right now in China, you won't maybe see it represented a lot on television and things like that. But like, as with many things in China, there's this like underbelly of like cultural bubbling up from the bottom. And the government usually picks the things that they want to represent China or kind of says like, okay, you've reached the top of visibility, like keep it under here and we'll let you keep doing it. So for the gay world, that's kind of what it is right now. You have like the most amazing situations though that are just super enigmatic that don't really fit into the dialogue. And I'm hoping that by providing these like data points of just experiences that people can come to their own conclusion of what gay life is like in China. But like I had a US friend and she was lesbian and she was out. I think I met her passing by like a wine bar in Chengdu. And she was the first person I had met who had just mastered Mandarin and was just completely speaking Chinese to everyone. She was with a group of lesbians and her girlfriend at the time was a lesbian attorney. And so, you know, they were just smart, educated people in the know with global values. Well, fast forward a few years, they ended up getting married in one of Chengdu's most like famous areas in Taikoo, having this highly publicized wedding that was like broadcasted live. Condé Nast wrote an article about the gay life in Chengdu. You know, some other travel magazines wrote about it and even mentioned their wedding. I've contributed to articles talking about how open Chengdu is. It's like, while you won't see it, you know, a Castro district with rainbow flags, like you can go out to any restaurant at any given time and just see like a bunch of gay friends hanging out. And I will have to say, I learned how to have gay friends in China. I was from Reno, which is really, you know, relatively small town. And I just had that small town mentality. I was still young, but in China, you know, I had that opportunity to grow and to learn. And there were so many people who were like, hey, let's be friends. Like they were very inclusive. Even within my semester, two semesters of studying abroad there, I had like a very thriving community of queer people to be around. I mean, group chats on WeChat, things like this, you know, getting invited to gay group chats. I'm part of an LGBTQ working group based out of Shanghai, where it's just people posting and looking for jobs, sharing resources amongst other LGBTQ people. So there's a lot of thriving LGBT culture. It's just not like, it's not in the form of a rainbow flag or like a TV show with representation in the way that we're used to it in the West. It's much more, a little bit more of a don't ask, don't tell thing, but people are increasingly open about it. I ended up having a lot of straight friends in China where they all knew and it was never an issue.
Brent, I love to hear you talk about these different opportunities and ways that you can connect and find your community. What would you say to students who are trying to find those resources or don't really know how to go about it? Or what strategies did you use? What platforms were you on to find those groups and find people who just really understood where you were coming from and what you were seeking abroad?
Great question. I mean, the internet is just, it's amazing what it's allowed for us to do. I know a lot of people, I think, don't use Facebook a lot these days, but Facebook groups are awesome. If you can find an expat group on Facebook for a city that you're in or an LGBTQ plus group, you just, you know, search Copenhagen LGBTQ plus group, whatever it may be, you can easily find a group of people. And, you know, the sooner you get invited to like a group chat or whatever, the better it is. And these are all over the world. You know, I've used these kind of resources as much as I can while being abroad. I think also, you know, I'm a social person. Not everyone is as extroverted as me, and I recognize that. So for me, I didn't have an issue of meeting someone in a public space and having a conversation and getting to know them and being like, okay, you know, do you know of any other like places where we can go for our community? What's it like? Like, I just ask a lot of questions. And I would really suggest that to people when you're on the street, when you're meeting people, you know, use your best judgment. You're in a foreign country. You have to have your guard up. But at the same time, like if you're just too timid to interact with a community at all, with society at all, it's not going to happen. And if you aren't as willing to kind of put yourself out there, I would say, you know, go online and look for groups, find that one person who's been there for a little bit longer than you, that's also a part of the community, and just ask questions. Like, they're going to be willing to pass on as much information as possible. I know that I try to whenever I get that chance.
I think that's great. Like you said, not everyone's as extroverted as you. I know I struggled when I studied abroad with being introverted and connecting with people, but that's a great piece of advice, is just, well, whether you're on apps or Facebook or meeting people in person, finding that one person that can kind of be your network assistant, essentially, to help you meet new people, find events, find your space in the community with just that one pillar of support. It sounds like for you, it really worked out, you know, and propelled you into an entire life abroad and an entire community of friends and coworkers and people that you could lean on and trust and be yourself with. And so that's a really great piece of advice, guys. All you have to do is find one friend, and then you'll find more friends and more
exactly.
friends.
Exactly. It's just that
that's
anchor.
How it works.
Yeah. It's like, I was just in Colombia a month, and I went there just because my friend who loves to dance salsa, she was like, I'm going to Colombia. And I was like, okay, me too. And, but I didn't know anything about where I was going other than it was the salsa capital of the world. I don't really dance salsa. You can find me at an electronic festival. I'll be there. But she's a huge part of the couch surfing community. And, you know, when she was backpacking around Europe, and she also studied abroad in like Alicante and Chengdu, but she, you know, arrives in a place and she goes on couch surfing and they have like these meetups, and it was instantly, we get a meetup and then we get to add each other on WhatsApp. At this point, because I've traveled so much and I've been to more than 30 countries and spent more than 7 years of my life abroad and like try to continue to maintain these relationships that I've fostered, I have like 20 different apps that I have to use to communicate with people, because people don't use iMessage in, you know, other countries, and people use WhatsApp. But for me in Colombia, for example, was just going to this one couchsurfing meeting some other expats, some French people traveling, some Colombians, and then adding them on WhatsApp. And then it was like, I had people to be like, hey, what do you want to go out for dinner? And, da, da, da. And the next thing you know, I'm like, my schedule's full of meeting up and hanging out with people. I think that people these days, and this is something that we talked about, you guys, about like the TikTok for USAC. Like, I'm super big on TikTok algorithms, like all the things. Like, I work for Meta, and like context now after studying abroad, everything. Like, I'm currently in the tech space. I'm a lawyer. I work for Meta for this global investigations team. That's what I do now. So I'm really into tech and really into integrating it into our lives. And I think study abroad students these days are even more aware and have even better platform than I did. And so it's like a hashtag search for like gay Alicante could pull up like some really interesting stuff, and like people tagging themselves in a location, you know, a gay community center or a gay bar. You could find a flyer for, oh, drag nights at this thing. If you know how to navigate this new world of algorithms and hashtags, like you can utilize that. You can find everything at your disposal. I know even right now, I live in Mexico working remote here, and I'm part of this expat LGBTQ group, and people are in there asking questions like, hey, does anyone have a recommendation for like a transgender affirming doctor in Mexico? And it was a trans person asking, where can I go get healthcare where I'm not going to be judged? And people were responding, giving recommendations. And I don't even remember how I ended up in this group chat. Like, it's just, I think I met one person and was like, you know, I asked again, me being the person I am, a little bit extroverted, I somehow just got into this group chat. But if you have a keen sense of navigating the mobile world, I'm not saying go study abroad and be on TikTok all the time, but TikTok will know pretty quickly that you're abroad, and like, you'll start getting content from your host country and start liking and interacting with that content in like Spanish or whatever language it is. And you'll start like getting even more, you know, into these, you'll into these cultural algorithms, and who knows where it will lead. I mean, who can predict the future, where technology is going and how we're interacting with Web 3.0 and all this stuff. But I think honestly, like that's the most brilliant thing that you can do. And I think it's great that you guys are can do TikToks and have these podcasts. The more that you put out there, I think the better it is. After my study abroad in Chengdu, I stayed there because I got this fellowship to do a master's in economics and Chinese. And then I ended up getting this job. But I never stopped communicating with USAC. I really was like, this opportunity was so great for me. It opened such a big door. And I just felt like I owe USAC so much. The resident director there, Wen Tao, she was just always part of my life. And even today, I talked to her and Jia Jing, who was working as an assistant at the time there, you know, who's one of my best friends in China now. We would go out for casual lunches and meetups. And when we had new students coming every semester, I would prepare a presentation and just volunteer and go spend 15, 30 minutes talking to all the new students about my experience and giving them like a fast track of like all the stuff that I wish I would have known. Like everything. Cause like for me, when I first arrived in China, I didn't know anything. I didn't even know how to say ni hao. Like I was so ignorant. And I met this girl in an elevator at our dorm who had been studying abroad for like 2 years in China. And we met up and it's just the funniest random thing. We just met up and she just divulged like every piece of like cultural knowledge and understanding that she could to me. And it pushed me so far forward. Like I was out integrating in China like way faster than a lot of my other peers, just because this one person had kind of paraphrased like her experiences. So that's what I would do later on for USAC, just volunteering to do that. And so the things that I would like to share with prospective students, and this doesn't just go for China, is something that I've just already shared, which is it's technology. It's going to be your biggest thing. And then putting yourself out there and seeking out opportunities and not being afraid to meet people. I have to say, when I was in China, some people, I don't know if they still do this. Do they still do this where you study abroad and you leave your smartphone at home and you bring like some flip phone or something? I don't think people do that.
No, I think now everybody has their smartphone. You know, it's 2022. I think that nobody's leaving their phones at home anymore.
It was like a different era. You thought you were like going off to like some Indiana Jones adventure or something.
It's true. To students listening to this, we used to keep our iPhones off, the very first few iPhones. And I remember I bought a flip phone when I was abroad in France and put a French SIM card in it, and we paid for credits to call home, text their friends, whatever it was. So yeah.
Yeah,
like thinking a lot about technology, count your blessings in that regard for sure.
Seriously. And like, I use local SIM cards all the time. I know phones now even have like dual slots. You can go buy a local SIM card. It was so cheap to have like unlimited data in China. And it wasn't like contracts. It just pays you go, you know, US is very predatory that way. But anyway, yeah, one of the things that I would tell students, because people at this time were already bringing their smartphones and everything. This makes us feel so old, I swear to God. But I told people the top five apps they need to download in China right now. It was everything from like the local Uber Eats and Amazon to WeChat, which is the ultimate super app of China. Without WeChat, you can't really do anything. WeChat is life. In fact, I was involved in a lawsuit when the previous administration tried to ban TikTok and WeChat from the United States as a retaliation against China. I was the lead plaintiff in a lawsuit against that executive order. And we got an injunction to prevent them from blocking the app. And then we ended up winning the case because I, as a plaintiff, had standing. I said, hey, if you block me from using this app, you're violating my First Amendment right, because I can no longer do the work that I was doing for advocating for US interests in China. I'm losing all my contacts. People in China don't use email. They don't use other things. Everything's on WeChat. And if you don't know that right away and you don't get on it right away, you're going to be at a huge disadvantage in terms of mobility in that country. And it goes the same for everywhere. If you're going to go to Latin America, you better be on WhatsApp. If you're in Japan, Line. If you're in Thailand, you got to probably get on Line and a few others. And now this stuff, you can just Google, like, what are the apps I need to have to live in Thailand? Don't wait on that. Like, get on that as soon as possible. And luckily, you can even sometimes use your bank account for an app to order food and stuff. And so you get to avoid all this hassle of having to pull out money or whatever, get transaction fees for. It's just the world is in such a better place now. And I think it's only going to get easier and easier and easier for in terms of resources. But I can't say enough, just technology, like mobile apps, you got to get on that. You got to be on that. And you've got to find the local stuff. And then, of course, using those with the LGBTQ community. I mentioned this a little bit. I'm a very transparent and open person. For me, dating apps, dating people in other countries was so awesome. It was like the best thing ever. That's really where I learned like the most, you know, just going out for coffee and having a conversation beforehand of like, hey, like I'm studying abroad here and I really would love to learn like more. Like, are you interested in going to like a cafe? And some people will be like, hey, a foreigner, like, cool, I can practice my English. So you'll get an opportunity sometimes to meet someone like-minded. As a student, I can say, I think that was really helpful. And I'm just being transparent and honest about my experience.
Thank you so much for sharing those incredible resources. Kind of rolling into this last question, I think this is perfect. What would you tell your younger self, right? So what's the one thing before you went to your study abroad experiences, what would it be that you would tell yourself? What's that resource you would give to you?
I don't think I knew how enriching these study abroad experiences would be to just really go outside of my bubble and my gay identity, even in the United States, to understand even what gay identities meant in different cultural contexts. It's mind blowing. And it's allowed me to navigate the world and society in a way now I have the tools and the cultural competence, even in the United States, to just be so much more aware of things that I wasn't aware of. One thing I kind of knew, but wish I really understood, was that by putting yourself in a situation of studying abroad, you are setting yourself up for a future self that you don't know yet and you can't know, because those experiences will shape you in a way that you just cannot predict in terms of flexibility or of self, and even relating to your gay identity. We are the vectors of change. And me talking about my experience and my balance of my gay identity in the context of China, that's just an example from a few years ago. Today, who knows? You know, tomorrow, who knows? You use your judgment. You're the vector of change. What is this new global world going to look like? And how are you going to represent yourself? Are you going to choose to identify with your trans identity? Or are you going to choose to just, you know, be passing? No judgment on either one. However you're going to relate to your identity as a gay person abroad, that has the potential to change wherever you are. It could be inspirational to people. I mean, there's so many ways that you could choose to approach study abroad and in relation to your gay identity, that I think there's no guidebook. You guys are writing the guidebook. And that's super exciting. If you're willing to take that risk, you're willing to go figure out what's it like to be gay in Mexico or wherever you go, and join some gay circles and friends and not put your expectations on it. Just learn. It's so open to interpretation. There's no direction. I think I just would tell myself, hey, you have a lot of power, and putting yourself in this context, the responsibilities that you have to make these decisions of cultural relativity, but staying true to yourself, like those are going to impact the future. And I hope that people consider that and are excited about that.
Brent, we cannot thank you enough for all of your stories and your passion, your expertise, sharing everything with us today. Certainly studying abroad as part of the LGBTQ+ community can present unique opportunities, certainly challenges that you've shared with us today, exploring a new culture, putting yourself out there. But I think just to wrap up, students who are listening to this episode, please do speak with your home university study abroad office. Absolutely get in touch with a USAC enrollment specialist. So sharing our resources is incredibly important to us. Our team is available to answer those important questions that you might have about studying abroad, whether it's LGBTQ+ related or anything else about the culture, which Brent, thank you so much for deep diving, especially into, I think, China culture today. That was fantastic. Or how accepting a program city might be, any on-site resources that you might need, and so much more. I would also recommend to students is, again, echoing Brent, right? Do some independent research, look for on-site organizations and support, and really leverage your technology. As Nicole said, it's year 2022. You can find everything online these days. So absolutely get out there, follow those hashtags and become part of those groups and find your anchor. I loved hearing that on today's episode. That way you can just start building your knowledge, your community, and I think your comfortability and your confidence too, right? Anything else you want to add before we wrap up today, Brent? It's been fantastic talking with you today.
Absolutely. You know, thank you so much, Amber and Nicole. The team at USEC, you guys are so well-versed, and I really appreciate your openness and just eagerness to like hear experiences such as mine. You know, I know sometimes I kind of talk all over the place. It's exciting to be asked these questions and to talk about it and engage with this. I'm so busy with my career right now, but this is like really my passion. It's really building these bridges across cultures. And so I want to extend to anyone listening, or if anyone reaches out to you guys, feel free to forward them my email address. If they want to talk to me personally, I'm always open. But like you said, echoing everything, I think technology is your biggest and best friend right now in the world, especially as an LGBTQ person, because you know, it might just be a hashtag that ends up resulting in finding your community abroad. But yeah, thank you so much. And I'm always happy to be here and share my experience and answer some of the tough questions, tougher questions even. I hope that students who are non-binary or trans or are thinking of transitioning or have questions regarding identity, I hope that they are able to also find resources to discuss this, because, you know, I can't speak on behalf of a trans person's experience, but I know some people who can, and I know you guys do too. So just anyone listening, like, we're here and we're happy to help as much as we can.
Thank you, Brent. I think that's the perfect sentiment to end on. Exactly, to echo what you said, we are here for you, and we have staff and a large, you know, 65,000 network of alumni that have had experiences and likely have had concerns that you are currently having or tackled challenges that you are worried about facing abroad. So don't hesitate to reach out, shoot us an email, or get in touch with your program advisor, enrollment specialist, anyone, and we can help connect you to the right alumni, the right resources, the right staff abroad, whatever you need.
Thanks, everyone. Happy Pride Month.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Students Beyond Borders podcast. If you have questions about USEC Study Abroad or would like to suggest an episode topic, email us at studyabroad@usac.edu. You can also send us a DM on Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok at studyabroadusac. To explore program offerings, scholarships, and more, visit our website at usac.edu.